Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the Concorde. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week I speak to Debs about parents caring. Over the years, Debs has set up local groups, local charities, parent forums, and national SEND as in SEND projects. She's written blogs, delivered training, and keynote speeches to a variety of parents, practitioners, and government leaders, both here and in the UK and internationally. Debs, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Debs, I think it'd be great for, you know, yourself to talk to us a bit more about what you did before and then how you got into what you do now in terms of parent caring.
Okay, so in my other life, BC, before children, I worked in travel. I thought I had a very stressful job. And my misspent youth, I was an 1830 rep, so... yeah, I've always worked in travel, loved it. And then I fell pregnant and my eldest son was born almost 19 years ago with hydrocephalus, so excess fluid on the brain. And that changed our plans a lot. We bought the house that we still live in as a property development. We were going to do it up and sell it and be millionaires. We're still in the same house. We've extended up and out and backwards. And,
as you do.
And then, so my eldest son was born with hydrocephalus. And then 14 months later, I gave birth to premature twins. Take all of that into account that I didn't plan on having children. I loved my job. I loved travel. My husband was happy. Children weren't on the agenda. But within 14 months, I had three children. But the twins were born prematurely. And as a result, my youngest son is totally blind. He had retinopathy of prematurity. And he was stage five, which meant his retinas are detached. And he didn't have much retinas, and what he did have are detached. So he has no vision. And a few, about 6 months later, we realized that there was development issues with my eldest son, and he was diagnosed with autism at 2.5. And so then we sort of got ourselves upright a little bit. Then we realized that my daughter, there was a speech issues. We were sort of sat with a speech therapist for one of my other children, and I went, how many words would you expect her to have? And they were like, oh, we're so glad you mentioned it. We're not allowed to tell you, and we're not allowed to instigate it, but we've all noticed that she doesn't have the language. So that started a whole sort of ball game for her of having speech, language and communication needs, later diagnosed with autism. Then we realized that my blind son was also struggling with some of society rules. And initially we kept being told it's a blindism. But we lived with autism in the house, and there were so many things I could see that were like, sure, that's autism. Anyhow, at the age of, I think he was 8, 9, he was diagnosed also with autism. And then we sort of like felt that we plateaued. We got all our labels. We'd shouted full house bingo, thank you very much. And we progressed. And then last year, out of the blue, my son who's blind developed epilepsy and started to have seizures. And it came from nowhere. And we've been through brain surgery, we've been through eye surgery, we've been through 10 weeks on NICU, just sort of when they were premature, and we've gone through all of that, and I'd go through it all again tomorrow to not go through the epilepsy. I have to say the epilepsy is the one that hit us the hardest. And yes, having brain surgery to put a shunt into my son's brain when he was 6 months old wasn't the most pleasant experience, but we knew once that was done, it would be okay. I think the epilepsy one is that uncertainty. I will touch wood. He has not had a seizure since last July. So
that's
we're
good. Okay, brilliant.
We think the medication is right and he's got the right balance of it. And he was also going through GCSEs and wasn't having the best time at school, whereas he's now in a college where they really embrace him and he's so happy. And so that's removed a load of stress for him. Because we believe it was triggered by stress. So that's how I ended up being involved in parent caring. It totally wasn't an agenda. It wasn't a planned thing at all. And I've always said I wouldn't change my children for the world. I would change the system tomorrow, but I wouldn't change my kids. They make me genuinely belly laugh every single day. They're amazing. They're fab. They're typical teenagers at times, and that can be a challenge, having three teenagers under the roof. But no, yeah, that's how I sort of got into that role.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Debs. I mean, you know, it sounds like you've got a wonderful family, but you've all been through a lot, you know. And I can see that it makes a lot of sense now. I always had to ask that question at the beginning of my interviews because I know there'll be something, and often I don't know what's happened before, but I know there'll be a link into why that person does what they do and their motivation for it as well. And I think it's good for our listeners to hear that, you know. Basically, what is parent carer? What is a parent carer? What is it to be a parent carer? Because I know it sounds very obvious, but do you know what I mean? I just, a bit of a breakdown would be brilliant.
I think people get, I don't think people appreciate it. It's like anything, isn't it? You don't understand it until you've been there. So whatever happens in life, you know, I mean, my father got a diagnosis of Parkinson's, and that was a whole new world for us. And until we'd been there, we couldn't appreciate what it involved. It's like I said, I thought my previous job was stressful. And as an 1830 rep, where you're working on sales targets, and if you don't get them, you're probably not going to eat that week. And I thought that was stressful until I had the children. And trying to find the right support for them, then to meet the criteria for that support, then to sort of, it's a constant juggling. And the best way I can always describe it is it's like spinning lots of plates and praying that you don't stop spinning the plate that you really need to keep spinning. And add into that, you've got the fact that most of our children, you know, my children don't sleep very well, never have. For many years, they were all medicated. They were all on melatonin. And because Jamie, obviously, he's blind. He's also got no light perception. So he doesn't know if it's day or night. And when you don't have light, these are all things we've learned. When you don't have light, your body goes on to a 25-hour body clock. So one night he'd be tired at 6, the next it'd be 7 and 8, and then this would go on. So melatonin helped to regulate that for us and helps us to get a sleep pattern. But they don't sleep and you're exhausted most of the time. And I think you're always waiting for the next thing to go wrong, because unfortunately the system isn't fit for purpose. And it's not because the people don't want to make it fit for purpose. It just isn't. And trying to get what you need. And well, it's not what you need. It's actually what your children need. It's not what you want. None of us want this. But trying to get that and balance that with actually being a family and, you know, actually having a day out somewhere or even everything else that goes with it. And many of our children have food phobias or you know, have food intolerance. So you're juggling all of that as well, trying to sort of, you know, make five different meals at mealtime and keep on top of all the paperwork. I mean, the amount of paperwork we get sent, because we get copied in on everything, which is great. Really, but the negative is I remember the day I had to go and buy a filing cabinet because a little folder was no longer any good. And that was a real reality check for me. I now have two. And it's that sort of, that's the difference. And so as a parent carer, you're very often unemployed because trying to find flexible employment is really difficult. Some people manage it and there are some amazing employers out there, but unfortunately they are few and far between. So that adds the financial pressure. You're probably not sleeping very well. I think it's something like 42-43% of marriages end in divorce with SEN children because of the stress that it puts on, because your child becomes your only focus and you can't focus on anything else while you're trying to sort out the school or whatever. So it's a challenging role. But yeah, like I've said all along, my kids are fab. The system's not very good. And so the reason I do everything I do is because I realised I've sat on the boards. Like I said, I've talked at government level. I've talked at government level internationally. But none of it really makes that much difference. And so instead of wasting all my time and energy trying to do that, I will support anyone who does it. But I do stuff where I help the parent carer, and silly things like tips on how to organise your paperwork and keep on top of it, because it's such a big thing, and you can guarantee there'll be a letter you've missed or a letter you've misplaced. So we do sort of like free downloads for them, which is like a paperwork guide on how to keep on top of it. We do things like planners and organisers so that all the information's in one place. So what I tend to do is focus more on how does the parent carer feel and what's going to help them as a tool that having, you know, living this with them, you know, I don't do it for a living, I live it. What has helped me? And I'm very fortunate. I have a very supportive husband who just whatever I want to do and try and do, he, you know, so the week of the festival when we're doing a site build, he's like, okay, I need to take a couple of days holiday then, do I? And he's just very supportive. And I'm very aware that not everyone has that. So, yeah, that's sort of how and why we all come to do what we do. But it's a challenging role. It's not one that I think people appreciate the challenges. Even if you work in the system, the chances are you may know lots of parents and lots of parent carers. However, there's a saying, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, because it's so different. And it's the same with parent carers. Our family dynamics, our support dynamics, our education, our ability, everything is different for every single person.
So. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Deb, thanks for that. That's a lot to think about. Do you know what interests me the most about what you were saying as well? It's about the services part. Yeah. Because, and it sounds like you try and echo that at government level. I think, am I right in assuming this is one of the discussions, the main discussions that you're having at government level to try and change things? What are some of the challenges and what are you trying to explain to them to maybe they can do? Or I want to find out a bit more about that, if that's okay.
I think within the system, it's that there's so many issues, but one of the big ones is nobody talks to each other.
And communication loss, basically. Yeah,
communication is appalling, and not just from education departments and health. We're talking about people who sit next to each other. And so you will have one social worker turn up, because there is a disabled children's service that offers social workers. And not for everybody, I have to say. The criteria, again, is quite high. But in all fairness, I would say they're underfunded. So they, you know, and that's one of the issues as well, is there's a lot of stuff that's underfunded, like there is for every service. This isn't just SEN. But what we're trying to get across to them is when communication isn't working and you are constantly having to tell your story time and time and time again, or you're turning up for an appointment and the person you're seeing hasn't even read through the notes before you've arrived because they haven't got time. But when you turn up and you're then wasting 40 minutes of your sort of meeting trying to explain all the background and, no, we've tried that. Oh, no, that medication didn't work. Or, you know, and when you do find those practitioners who do get you. So we've got a new one recently because of my son's epilepsy. And I've said to everyone, if I could just clone her, life would be better for everybody. If I could clone her across the whole health service, she's amazing. She gets him. She's made it very clear in a really friendly way that he can ask any question. And that means it's something, and she doesn't judge. So a prime example, we had a meeting last week and he suddenly turned around and he went, I have a question. And I'm like, oh no. And he went, because I'm 18 in October. And she went, oh, right, yeah, okay. And he said, so am I allowed? Like, if I wanted to, could I get hammered? And I was like, no, you can't go and get hammered. But she was brilliant about it. And she went, right, okay, on the medication you're on, you're allowed to have a few drinks. But I would strongly advise, because, and then she was talking to me about how it's the hangover that may trigger the seizure more than the actual alcohol. And but she didn't dismiss him. She didn't ridicule. She was very good at the way she dealt with it. And so he walked away, sort of, he knows now that he can ask her anything. And he knows that he's not going to be ridiculed or judged or dismissed. She totally gets that that's an important thing to him at the moment, because he is almost 18. And there was no, oh, well, can't do it. That's not, we'll talk about that when you're 18. Or she was very good. And it's those sort of little things that make the big difference. But the communication, you know, with the communication with our GP, she'd emailed them and sent the letter telling them what the doses was. It ended up with me basically sitting inside the surgery, refusing to move to get it sorted, because I was like, you've run out and I have given you 3 weeks to put this in. And I totally get how busy everyone is. But if he misses a dose, it can trigger a seizure. So this is important. And again, that was where it hadn't been communicated properly within the GP service. They thought that they were still prescribing it. And it's those sort of things that all add to the burdens. And you're constantly having to remember who does what and who you go to them for and who's responsible. And the stress is like unbelievable. You know, I've been on stress meds. I've been on anti-anxiety meds. And at one point, I even got put on sleeping tablets for a short time, because it was all just too much. Thankfully, I know I've just said my GP doesn't communicate, but I do have a very good GP. And he was very good at sort of putting me in touch with a counsellor and trying to support me in other ways, and wanting me to have a plan to not be on the meds all the time and to consider other options. So, yeah, I've been very fortunate in that. But yeah, we've had some absolute horror stories at the same time. But communication is the big thing. And as a parent, our children have education, health and care plans. And from that being initially discussed as a green paper, it was all about people who communicate. They still don't. And there's still barriers to that, because there's obviously GDPR and everything. And nobody's actually sat and gone, hang on, how do we make this work? It becomes a case of, well, we can't do it this way because, and then there's no, let's think outside the box, how can we make it work? And I think as a parent, you spend most of your time, you're like a full-time PA to your child and managing the diary. And I appreciate people will have, you know, social clubs that they all go to. You know, we all know parents who their children go to 24 after school clubs, and that's fine. That, you know, you do you. But that's a choice. Whereas what we have to do, and the appointments and the letter writing and the emails, they're not a choice. They are things that our children need. It's not what, you know, if we could find a way to make it work where we didn't have to do that, and I could just be a full-time mum, it'd be brilliant. But the system doesn't allow for that.
Yeah, no, it sounds it. I know you've mentioned some of the stressful areas of being a parent carer. What are the main stresses, do you think?
I'd say, I think the main stresses for us as a family have always been, well, for us, we've got three children with special needs. So, and yes, there is some overlap. So, you know, one of them, you know, they may see one doctor between three of them. Like when they were younger, the paediatrician who did their development was the same person for all three. But when they were younger, we had people who come in who were VI specialists for Jamie. We had people who come in who were physio, because Kane had physio issues. We have people who come in to do portage, which is like a preschool education, but they came in for Kane. We had a speech and language therapist who was seeing Rosie somewhere else, but we had another speech and language therapist who came and saw my other son. And it's that just spinning it all. And, you know, I've turned up a month early for an appointment. Thankfully, it was a month early and not a month late, where I'd taken all three children in tow and moved this pram and got it all up to. And I was so proud of myself to walk in and be told I was a month early. And so it's trying to juggle all of that with very little sleep. And while all that is going on, you're trying to learn. You're trying to learn about how best to support your child and what works. So for us, with Jamie, it was like trying to learn some Braille and trying to learn some, with Kane, my eldest, we learned some Makaton sign language. And it's trying to learn all of that and juggle the diary and run a house and all of it without sleeping. So it's all, you know, one of those where it's a real challenge.
Yeah, and it sounds it. And sleeping, that sleep aspect is, that's a whole nother realm in itself, because as you know, when you don't sleep properly, when you're actually awake, if you can call it being awake, it's like a nightmare. You can't focus properly. You've got to try and, it's like fight or flight, isn't it? It's kind of like fight or flight. You've got to, you're just reflexively just trying to, you're just doing for the sake of doing, and you can't think properly. You've just got to do it.
Yeah. And it's trying to, you know, one of the biggest challenges initially was trying to remember who everybody was, because loads of people turned up to talk to us. And then it was like, oh, hang on, who was she? And what did I talk to her about? And most of them have job titles that don't explain what their job is. And so you sit there going, hang on. And so I resorted to writing physical descriptions and making things like, one lady I remember always wore leopard print something. And it's like, right, she wore leopard print. And another lady always had amazing nails. So it's like, she's the lady who's got the fab nails, and this is what I go to her for. And I think the problem is as well, is when you're hyper stressed, and it happens to us all, you forget how to get yourself back up. And so one of the tools that I came across that has helped us enormously is what we call the bad day list, or words to that effect. But it's when I've had a bad day and things are really bad, I don't have that capacity to remember what will cheer me up or what will make me a bit happier. So when I'm in a good place, we've done it as a family. We all write lists of things that we know make us happy, not necessarily expensive things. You know, for me, we're very fortunate that we don't live far from the coast. So for me, it's go down to the beach, sit there for a few hours and just relax, or go for a walk or listen to a podcast while I'm down there. My daughter had one, which was being allowed to have ice cream before dinner. That made her happy. It's when you've had that bad day, having that list to sort of go, I forgot actually. Yes, that makes me happy, and it's something I can do. And it's just those little tiny things. And I honestly believe that's that one tool is the thing that has got me through. So, I mean, my eldest son's almost 19, so we've gone through 19 years. And I swear that tool is the one that made the most difference out of everything else we did.
That is brilliant. Yeah.
And it is, it's, you know, silly things. Like I said, I'm an 1830 rep. So I know if I put 90s Ibiza anthems on, I feel good and I feel happy. And I, you know, it cheers me up. And so, again, that's on my list of things that, okay, if I'm having a bad day, let's try this. Put a bit of 90s, you know, Ibiza anthems on and let's see. And sometimes that'll work, sometimes it won't. But I've got a list that I made when I was happy or having a good day. And it really does help. I'm, like I said, we've used them with the children. And when they've had a bad day at school, they'll come home and go, right, where's my happy list? What can I do today? All right, that's been a really bad day. What can I do? And so they add all of those on.
It sounds like a gratitude list. Like it kind of merges with that, or overlaps kind of, like, and having like a journal. Is that right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I journal a lot, but I think this is more. It's like a reminder, like a checklist of things you can try.
Yeah.
That will make you, you know, and it can be silly things like I love, very sadly, I love the smell of tarmac. And so I know I will drive around sometimes just to find someone that's having a new road so I can have a smell of tarmac. Because it makes me happy.
Definitely killing me.
Don't. Me
I think it's brilliant, but it's, when you started saying that, I was like, "Oh, what? That's a new one."
There you go.
And, and each to their own. And I think I'm not judging. It's just I've never heard of it before, so it kind of shocks me, like with humour. But I think that's fantastic. I mean, look, I think whatever makes you happy. Do you know what I mean? I think we're all individuals.
Yeah,
exactly. We're all very different now. So because human nature is very different, and you know the brain and psychology, etc. And if there's something that you know, I think people shouldn't hold themselves back from doing things that make them happy, even though it might be very different to what other people might do. Because everyone's different,
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. You know? And that's it, is, you know, what's on my list is very different to what my husband would have on his or what my friends would have.
Absolutely.
You know, I've got friends who her list would be gin and cheese. and that's what makes her happy. That's fine. And at the other times, I'm sort of more about, okay, I need to, because what I find as well is if I'm really tired and really involved in what's going on, I need to go away from the house and I need to, like I said, the beach is my place, because I find that very often either on the drive home or while I'm sat at the beach, I get some sort of clarity and I'll come up with a different idea. And, you know, most of the things I've done, like the planner, that was something that I was already doing for myself. And it was only one day I was sat down at the beach and I'd met another mum. And I took it out to write something. She was like, make me one. I can't believe it. Where did you buy it from? And I said, I've made it. She'd make me one. And then it was like, hang on, this could be a business that could actually help my children to have employment. But my big dream of it is to employ other parent carers on a way that helps them. And so, you know, everything I do, it's always like, how can this help somebody else? And I think that makes me happy. And I'm aware of that. That gives me a real buzz. So the festival that we do, Festability, makes me happy because I see parent carers relax and everybody else. So yeah, I think being happy is something that we should all be aiming for in whatever shape or form it comes.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And we're just going to another ad break and we'll be right back.
Radio. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Debs, I know you touched on medication a bit earlier and sleeping tablets.
Yeah.
Medications, do they kind of help? And because I know you get like antidepressants as well, and there's various medications that people can use. The sleeping tablets, did they actually help you?
They helped me. We were having, we were basically at crisis point. There was an incident that had caused an awful lot of stress. And I couldn't sleep. And I was over stressed. My brain wouldn't switch off from thinking about worst case scenarios of what could happen. And I was just at breaking points, and my GP was very good, but he only gave me a couple of days prescription for the sleeping tablets. And that was because he could see I sat in his room and sobbed for about an hour and couldn't stop.
Of course. Okay.
And he knew that was going to have to be, I needed to sleep. And so
it's like a last resort, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it sounds like he didn't want to just put you on that, basically. Yeah.
No. And he was very clear about it was a very short-term fix, and it was just to basically help me to, because my brain needed a break, and yeah, I needed to sleep, and I couldn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
The antidepressants I was on for years, they really helped. They helped through a bad time. Initially, I felt a real shame, and I didn't want to admit that this, I was on them. And I remember even saying to my GP, I'm not depressed, I'm stressed. But taking his advice and his knowledge and taking them was the best thing I did, because it helped me to just level up. And then over the years, I've learned other tools like my happy list and other things like meditation, like being at the beach and all of those things. I've learned things that help me to get on without needing medication. But I'm now at a point where I would have no shame if that's what I needed. And I think that's really sad, because there's a lot of parent carers out there who may benefit from it from a short term, just to help them through some of the really hard times, because there are certain key like stages that become really challenging. But they have this real like, I can't go on antidepressants, what's everyone going to think? And actually most people don't care anymore. But we think that people worry about it. But the anti-anxiety medication, again, I was only on that short term. But again, it's about, I've learned different strategies that help. And none of them are perfect. None of them work every single time. But yeah, the medication really helped at a time when I needed it. And if I needed it again, I'd be very happy to go down that route. It's not been a negative for us.
It sounds like it's use it as a stepping stone to just get yourself back on your feet, basically. And then my understanding is I spoke to GPs about this years ago, but usually when you're coming off it, you have to be weaned off it as well.
Yeah. So we were weaned off the antidepressants. I'd never gone to a very high dose. And I think it was more a case of, I needed to know that I was doing something and someone was helping me, rather than me having to do everything by myself. Because like I said, my husband is fantastic. He is a really supportive husband, but he works all the hours God sends. And I do all the stuff he's great weekends. He takes them out on bike rides and whatever they need to do. But the actual day-to-day, knowing who's where, what, and how it all works, and who's got what appointments, and who's got an exam, and have they got the extra time allowed, and as the invigilator, and has that been, all of those things he doesn't get involved in. And that's fine. That's not a criticism at all. Like I said, he's a brilliant guy. But when you're doing all of it, and it was like the doctor gave me this like step up. It was like, these will help. And we tried lots of things before. He was very, it wasn't like, oh, this is an easy fix. You know, he totally talked me through it. He talked to me about coming off them. He talked about what possible, side effects. He was so good. And that makes a big difference. And he just genuinely, he didn't dismiss I've sat with people who sort of basically say, well, that's just the way it is, mate. And it's like, yeah, it is. You know what? It is. Doesn't mean it's the right. And it doesn't mean I have to cope with it every day. Some days it's going to get hard.
No, absolutely. And I know one of the other things that you mentioned earlier is about parent carers' difficulties in terms of employment.
Yeah.
Why are some of the challenges to do with hours of caring, and it might clash with employment hours and that kind of thing?
It's a bit of everything. So there's the whole, I can get a phone call at any time because there's been a meltdown, or there's been a seizure, or there's been, and I have to be able to drop everything and go. And so finding an employer who will let you do that, and it's a regular thing. If it was just a one-off or once a year or something, it wouldn't be so, but it can be quite a regular occurrence. And then if things aren't going right in a school, it's the hours that you have to spend, because you have to go into the school during school time. And so you're having to leave to go and sort that out, or you get school transport. But if that doesn't turn up, you're the person who's reliable. If you're PA for the children, if you have direct payments and you have a PA who helps out and takes them out, if they don't turn up, you're the PA. So you're constantly in demand. And so when you're trying to balance that with a job, it's it's nigh on impossible.
Yeah.
Now, the people I know who have full-time employment are people who had been with the company for a long, long time, and their children don't tend to have huge medical issues. They may have some, but it's usually people who've been at a company for a long time, and there's a lot of flexibility there. But trying to go for a job and knowing that at any time you could get a phone call from the school or the college, or, you know, you could, and it's that you can get an email that can just send you down, or, you know, you've been turned down for something, or you've been told that your child isn't disabled enough to access this, or, and you feel like you've failed your child because you didn't fill out the form properly. And it's that emotional impact of trying to do that and do a job. You're human. You can't switch everything off. So employment's a real issue. And it's funny because I've just launched a new project, which is helping parents to look at self-employment and different ways they can be employed for themselves with that flexibility, without having to, you know, there's loads of business courses out there, but my Lord, some of them are extortionately expensive. And so I don't want that for them. I want them to be able to afford it and to learn the different things I've learned over the years. And when I said I was going to do it, I had two other parent carers who both run businesses who jumped on and went, we're on, how do we help? How can, you know, I know this and I can happily tell people how to do that. So that's my latest new project. So, but again, it's about, hopefully it will encourage parents to look at a way they can get, be employed, but self-employed with flexibility. And so that's what I have to do. And there's days where I can have a whole day planned and something will happen, and I know that I will have to ring people up and go, I'm really sorry, I can't do this, but I'm my own boss. And that brings its own pressures and its own stress, but that flexibility and knowing that some months, you know, that little bit of extra money coming in is that will pay you for a day out or buy you the ice creams down the beach or whatever it is that for some families, especially at the moment, is just a pipe dream. So, and it's a challenge. So who knows? We don't know where it'll all go, but I'm hoping that if in 12 months I've got two or three parents who are making some income that they weren't making now, I'll be really happy. That'll go on my happy list.
Why do parent carers tend to put themselves at the bottom of the list of things to do in terms of caring for themselves?
We all do, and we all know we shouldn't. Mm. We've all heard the oxygen mask analogy. What was interesting for me was, I like I said, I reached breaking point and I ended up with chest pains and got rushed into the hospital. What they thought was a heart attack, and it wasn't, thankfully. It was a bad stress attack. And the guy who worked on A&E, one of the doctors, he was one of the best people who came to me, because he came over, started asking about the stress things. Did anything in my life was stressful? And my children were all still relatively young, and I just broke into tears. And I was going, oh, and then I got this, and I got that. And he was like, wow. And then he said to me, right, can I ask you a question? And I said, Jenny, he goes, do you know Harry Potter? And I said, yeah. He goes, do you aspire to be him? And I went, no. And he went, no, this is fictional, isn't he? And I said, yeah. And he goes, why are you aspiring to be Superwoman? And I went, I'm not. And I started laughing, and he went, you are. He said, you all do it. You aspire to be this perfect Wonder Woman who balances it all, who gets it all sorted. And she's a fictional character. And she was created by a man, and she doesn't have children, and she doesn't have special needs children. And he said, so why on earth, if you're accepting Harry Potter's fictional, you can never be him, why do you think you can be Wonder Woman or Superwoman? And it was a really good advice. And his actual advice to me was to stand in the mirror on the days when I was really struggling and go, Wonder Woman is a fictional character. She does not exist. And I did that. I did it for a bit. It was silly and it was fun, but it worked. And it is something I use to this day. And I will say to mums when they're getting themselves really stressed, yeah, not Wonder Woman. It's those sort of, we put so much pressure on ourselves because we're so scared of dropping one of the plates because we took time out for ourselves. And it takes us an awful lot of time. And like I said, my eldest son's nearly 19, and it's only really in the last few years that I've really valued taking time for myself.
Gosh.
And self-care. Before that, I was, yeah, it was hard. But it's only really in the last few years. And that's because I realised that those very quick wins, so being at the beach for 20 minutes, gave me such a boost. And actually, I was a better parent, Clara, for it. And I had more energy. And then a few years ago, somebody said to me, it was a quote they'd read somewhere, as you get, but it was, self-care enables you to give the world the best of you rather than what's left of you. And it was like, okay, yeah, my children deserve the best of me, not what's left of me. And if I want to be here for my children, I need to look after myself.
100%, absolutely. You're the main core component, to be honest, you know, and if your mental well-being is not right, nothing's going to be right, you know, and it's harsh to hear it, and it's harsh to in your mind think about it, but it's the absolute truth. And, you know, and it's brilliant that you've acknowledged that, you know, and it sounds like you're obviously you support and you well, just to mention, I mean, talk to us a bit about the local groups, charities, parent forums you've set up, because, you know, there's been multiple things you've set up to help parent carers, isn't it?
Yeah, so initially it started with a very local group in my town, and that was bringing families together and a coffee mornings and the occasional sort of soft play event. And then we set up a charity that covered the whole of sort of like the south, I'm in Kent, so it was the southeast of Kent. That was a parent-led charity, and we set that up. And that, again, was about putting on events and activities and supporting parents. And then parent carer forums became this thing where every local authority had to produce a parent carer forum. So I helped to set up the one here in Kent and ended up chairing it. And that was about people who sit on the boards, who talk at the county hall and talk to councillors and people to sort of put over the parent perspective. And then from that, I helped to set up a national community interest company that we focused. Our work was all around families whose loved ones had gone into assessment and treatment units and they couldn't get them out. So we did a lot of work there around that, talking to those families who, I mean, their stress is a whole different level, because our children are at home and we know where they are and we know when we're going to see them next. And they're not at the other side of the country. And so I did this. But again, I just, as time's gone on and I've sat on so many boards and I've sat and been the parent carer rep and I've ticked so many boxes for people to say, parent carer was here. Yep, she gave her opinion. Yeah, didn't do anything with it. And I take my hat off to the people who are still on parent forums. Some are very successful and make a real difference, and others, unfortunately, because you're relying on parent carers who are exhausted to run them and to recruit people and to put events on. And it's an awful lot to ask. And so that's when I sort of moved away and started doing sort of other stuff that was directly aimed at the parent carer, what made my life easier that I could share with them. So, and I do a monthly online Zoom call with any parent carers who want to join in, where we talk about bouncing back and different skills. And, you know, I talk about from my 90s Ibiza music on, I talk about the happy day list and all of those things, because they're all things that have helped me. And so I put that on. That's a freebie every month. For parent carers to just zoom in and chat with me. And I think what's lovely is when you do it, you can see the parents sort of going, ah, actually, yeah, I could do that. Because we talk about stress and we talk about not only the signs and symptoms, but recognising that you are stressed. And what we did is I kept going out to parent carers saying, how do you know you're stressed? And so we just did big lists from everything that everyone had said. And it was things like when daily tasks become a major chore, like pegging out the washing, and suddenly I can't even, the thought of even doing that, it becomes this huge task. And she said to me, this woman said, I know that's when my stress levels are, because normally it's one of those things that just gets done. And so it was recognising that and recognising it in other parent carers, because sometimes we'll meet another parent carer who's had a bad day and they will flip because you happen to be the parent and the person that they've met. And you're not responsible for everything that's going on, but they need to offload and rant. And taking that on can be really draining as well. But yeah, so like I said, we do it as a freebie and it's always really well attended and people love it. And we do free downloads as well on the site, so people can just download a quick checklist so they can sort of get some ideas from what other parent carers have said. Because most of the stress books, when you read it, I'll say things like, have a nice hot soak in a bath. And you're going, you know what? I can't even go to the toilet on my own. It's not going to happen. So, yeah, we try to come up with things that other parent carers told us rather than what we'd found on a website or...
Debs, thank you so much for today. Been really insightful. I think you're doing a tremendous job, honestly. And it sounds like a very challenging role, but there's been a lot of pluses from, you know, what you've done and, you know, you as a parent carer and, you know, look how lovely your children are. I think it's a fantastic thing, you know. If people were to reach out to you, is there somewhere they can find you on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on most social media. I'm trying to learn TikTok, much to my children's disgust. But it's just at Life Aspland, LifeAspland at Life Aspland.
On and Instagram, on isn't it?
Yeah. Instagram, Facebook, everything.
Brilliant. Debs, thank you so much for today. Much appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And thank you to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.